Are you hearing this new sound?
The new sound?
When you rang me, they've killed the classic Skype ring noise. They've discoed it up.
This is an outrage. How could they?
Right? I'm outraged. Did you hear that when it was ringing?
No, I had my quotation marks speakers off.
I'm wondering what kind of speakers you have if they require quotation marks.
Oh, it's the time of the year where every day feels like Monday.
I thought for a minute it was Monday, but you're right, it's Tuesday. It's Tuesday. Sorry to hear that. Is it hard to get out of bed?
Everything is hard. So even the weather is hard.
Really?
Yesterday we had like iced roads and rain.
The kind of rain that's kind of just warmer than freezing, and then like it lies on the road and then it just becomes more ice.
Yeah.
Blech. That's not fun driving weather, I would think.
I spent 1.5 hours on a bus trip yesterday morning.
How long should that take?
Like 50 minutes.
Yeah. Sorry. Condolences or what everyone says. I'm very sorry for your troubles.
Did you have your waffle?
I've had my waffle. I'm not sure the coffee's working. I've doubled down. I've got tea. Something will work. Maybe?
Your coffee, which is tea, doesn't work?
I drank the coffee. Now I'm onto the tea.
Ah. Tea after coffee.
Are there rules? Did I just break a rule? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's a thing somewhere. I don't know where. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
How am I? Yeah, I'm all right, actually. I'm pretty perky for it being December. I'm sorry if you're not. I can ask you back, how are you? But I think we've established that you're very Monday.
I feel like Garfield.
Or someone in Office Space.
I just remember the altered comic strip Garfield without Garfield.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
we have to link to that. That is so good.
So you wanted to have this episode about chips, and I wondered, potato chips, wood chips, what kind of chips? I'm in.
Well, I'm
we
from
are
Scotland,
a chip country,
we?
After all.
We do deep fry our food. Strangely, no. I had an experience, and it reminded me about the whole chip on shoulder thing of being Scottish. We've danced around, and we've never really got into the whole kind of East Coast, West Coast thing in Norway. Like, it's been alluded to, but we've never really gone there. And I don't know whether this is because it's a cliche. As a kind of theme, not on this podcast because we haven't had time to make it a cliche yet, but I'm sure we will. But like nationally in Norway, whether it's just a fact of life or what, but it reminds me an awful lot of being Scottish and having to deal with the fact that there's a much bigger country to the south, which has a history of not treating Scotland very well. That would be England, by the way, for those looking at a map and puzzling. I don't know. So, rewind a bit. I wrote some stuff that was going to go out to one of our customers, and as always happens when I write in Norwegian, someone else needs to have a quick pass through it to kind of tidy it up and make sure, because my copy is not totally client ready. It's all right, but it's not perfect by any means. And I got conservative book mould. Like, I'd written grammatically using three genders. Previously, when I'd written something that was going out to a client, I'd written it in two. I thought, like, I'll just play it safe. And then this time, I was like, no, actually, yeah, I feel like, you know, using all three. I use all three in speech. Let me use all three grammatical genders right here on the page. And then when it was being korrekturlest, so sort of proofread by my colleague, who went through it and, like, made everything read properly and tidied up the grammar and everything like that. It also got erased all trace of three genders, and she went back to two. And I was like, oh! And it gave me a really weird deja vu of being in Scotland and being told that I'm English, which is a thing that happens to Scots a lot of the time. They're described by the rest of the world often as being English, and they're like, no, I'm Scottish. You can say British, and that's great, but don't call me English, because I'm not that. And it was something, it was that kind of, no, kind of thing. So what's going on?
And that's... is your chip on your shoulder.
That is the chip on my shoulder, and on the shoulder of many, many other Scots.
But you have to explain the expression.
Oh, yeah, because well, this is harder.
Because I'm picturing an actually a chip.
It is not a deep-fried potato. It is not any kind of potato product. I will read to you from the source of all that is good and correct, Wikipedia. I'll read to you from Wikipedia. To have a chip on one shoulder refers to the act of holding a grudge or grievance that readily provokes disputation. It can also mean a person thinking too much of oneself, often without the credentials. I don't think it gets used in that sense very much in the UK now. History. A chip on the shoulder comes from the ancient right of shipwrights within the Royal Navy dockyards to take home a daily allowance of offcuts of timber, even if good wood was cut up for this purpose. The privilege was instated as a prescriptive right from 1634, many footnotes. By 1756, this privilege had been abused and was costing the taxpayers too much in lost timber for warship repair and construction. The decision was then made by the Navy Board to limit the quantity a shipwright could carry home. A warrant was issued to the Royal Dockyards to reduce the quantity of chips by ordering shipwrights to carry their bundles under their arms instead of on their shoulders, as one could not carry as much timber in this fashion. Then they relate a thing which I'm not going to talk about. The TLDR here is basically like having a chip on your shoulder means that you feel like you've been hard done by. You feel like you've been ripped off or something, and you're kind of bitter about it, and you want to get your own back. And you kind of, it's a thing that you're like, well, something happened to me that's not fair, you know, etc.
Yeah, so I get the meaning of the metaphor, but I don't get the etymology and how some damn wood chips became sort of this mental state.
There's a, without like just reading you an entire Wikipedia page, which I'm sure our listeners will find completely actually fascinating.
Yeah, I had a new idea for a podcast. Chris Reads Wikipedia.
It could take off, I think. 2 subscribers. one of them is like probably one of my parents. It's, if you go into the page, it's a little bit obscure, but it's one of those things where the meaning maybe has kind of drifted slightly from what originally happened.
It sounds good, though.
It sounds good. It sounds like really authentic, right? Because it's got like naval dockyards and stuff, and yeah.
But as they say, it's better with a chip on your shoulder than a ship on your shoulder.
I got nothing. I was going to say it depends on the ship, but yeah, it doesn't sound like a thing I want. So, leaving aside the etymology of the phrase, right? Do you know, this is really annoying. New Skype is buggy as fuck. Like if I command tab between windows and then I come back to you, now I've just got 2 Knuts. Last time I had 2 me.
I have 2 Chris's.
Awesome.
I actually have a Chris on a Chris's shoulder.
Yeah, me too. you've got like a Chris on your shoulder. It's like a, no way. Oh, wait. I've just realised that I've now got a miniature Knut and an even smaller Chris. This is amazing. I'm kind of wondering how this is going to iterate next, and maybe there'll be like an even smaller Chris or something. I'm sending you a screenshot. This is so good. I'm sorry, this is not... Oh, this has to...
I can't screenshot the little window.
No?
It's a ghost window.
No. Yeah.
What?
You're right. It doesn't exist. Baffling. That is baffling. Wow. Yeah, okay. Well, whatever. Thanks, Skype. Thanks for putting all that money into, like, all that. I can close it, though. I can close Tiny Knut. I've closed Tiny Knut. If they would just stop dicking around with all of this stuff and, like, actually just make the calls work.
Leave Skype alone.
I used to work there. I get to bitch about it. Anyway, we're moving on. Yeah, so this chip on shoulder thing.
Yeah.
Would you care to elaborate? Like, there is a very palpable East Coast, West Coast thing, and most of the time it's friendly and kind of jocular, for want of a better word. But it's real.
It is real.
The struggle is real.
It is not only jocular.
No. Yes and, right?
But I feel a bit like I'm sitting in the confession, not in the confession stand, in the confession booth.
Yeah, I think you're in a usability testing booth, but you know, close enough.
Stand, confession but... booth, concession booth.
How's that
confession
going?
Stand.
I'm just going to make a tape of this repeating on loop with like a drum and bass underneath it. I think that could work. You are sitting in the usability test. Tell me, how long has it been since your last usability test?
Too long.
Okay.
Father, I have a chip on my shoulder.
Tell me, my child, what is the problem?
Well, I have this confusing sense of inferiority and superiority at once.
You have just nailed the whole chip on shoulder thing. That is awesome. That's just what the Wikipedia page should say. Beautiful. Please
carry on. I have all this simple English Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, like I'm five, should totally be a thing.
But it is hard to tease out because I think for our case, it's mostly about not sort of being forgotten about.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We exist. We do things.
It's more complicated in Norway, right? Because Vestlandet, so the kind of the western part of the country, is not the other half of the country. There's the south part of Norway and there's the north part of Norway, and both get forgotten about. So, like, if anyone should have a chip on their shoulder, isn't it them?
Yeah, and I think they have it, but it is expressed differently. Because if you go into the stereotypes, I think the Northerns. They are, when I talk about Southerns, and then it's everyone south of, I don't know, Nordland or something.
Right.
They are often characterized as a bit wimpy and soft and, you think it's cold, you know nothing, right? And so on. But I think the feeling of not being sort of not being, I struggle for the word here, but
included.
Yeah, perhaps not being included exists there as well.
Hmm. Because it's all about.
Yeah, we have an expression for this actually, or people outside of Oslo often talks about what happens outside of Ring 3.
Yeah. Which is the most outer ring road in Oslo.
Yeah. And that's decisions and prioritizations and so on sort of is in this bubble where the politicians forget about what happens in the rest of the country.
Right. It's very comparable to England and London, specifically London in the southeast, which are a very good fit in this sort of comparison for Oslo and the immediate area surrounding, which is that pretty much all the government happens there, and not so much now because Scotland got its own parliament, but particularly if you live in kind of the rest of England, for example, everything's about London. All the money is in London, all the jobs are in London. I mean, this is an exaggeration, but it's not that far from the truth. And London is very selvopptatt is a great word in Norwegian, just obsessed with itself and kind of only interested in itself. so is it in Oslo, really.
And it's a bit weird because, for example, the politicians, more often than not, they are from the other places in Norway.
Yes. But then, like the Prime Minister, they forget how to talk in a way that comports with how people there think of themselves. They go native.
Yeah. And not only native, like politician native. So yeah, it is a thing, absolutely. And I guess I have it as well.
I see it sort of, it's never that far away. Like, I see it in Slack a lot, not from you personally, but generally from people in our Bergen office. There's often a kind of friendly to and fro about stuff happening in Oslo and, oh, Oslo's so fancy and, you know, remember us over here. But, like, it comes out in subtle ways, but it's a thing that I notice as a Scot. It's a thing that's present for me. And the majority, maybe, of my colleagues here would be English if we were having this conversation in the UK, and they don't notice it.
Hmm.
I think.
So what kind of things, beside of being called English, provokes this feeling?
Well, the thing that made me think about it originally was actually a thing from a forum that I sent you, which looks like it's from about 2003, on the internet, maybe even earlier, which is actually
because
about...
people don't know this, your hobby is to collect old web forms.
Yeah, you should mention that more. it's actually from 2011. It's just at the griefscotland.com. Get your act together. This is a little embarrassing. Anyway,
aren't they on the GovUK thingy?
I think this is a private concern. Scotland has gone fairly heavily in for that, I think, in Scottish government. But this is something else. Yeah, Scottish cringe. And I'd not heard this phrase, but it's a great phrase. Like when people describe Scotland as like eating haggis and wearing tartan and saying "Hoots, mon!" "See you, Jimmy!" And stuff like that. And it's embarrassing. It's, you know, very unidimensional. Here's a nice... to Wikipedia, the Scottish cringe is a Scottish cultural cringe claimed to exist by some politicians and other commentators. These Scottish cultural commentators claim that a sense of cultural inferiority, there you go, to the thing you said earlier, is felt by many Scots, particularly in relation to a perceived dominance of English culture, partly due to the importance of London within the United Kingdom, and consequently a sense of Scottish resentment and underachievement. Blah, blah, yeah.
I think that we should make the Scottish cringe our official small differences drink.
How do you make a Scottish cringe? Seriously, what are the ingredients apart from potato chips?
Well, I think it should come served with a potato chip. and it certainly should consist of some single malt something.
Yes.
And something else.
It needs to be single malt that you've put something English in and consequently ruined.
Gin.
Some people might like that. Gin is very English, though. How about single malt whiskey that you've put like a kind of damp tea bag in?
Absolutely. That is the Scottish cringe.
it's not a damp tea bag, it's a garnish. Or whatever you call things that you put in cocktails. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay.
So Scotland.com. Because they have forums. And you linked to this earlier in a direct message.
Yeah.
Because it mentioned the inferiority... But in this forum, you also have things that Scottish people are proud of.
Okay, good. Say more.
You say more.
Well, I haven't read
what,
the rest
what
of the
What are
forum.
Great things Scottish people have done before?
Oh, many things. Sorry, before we leave this page, I just have to say that the first comment on this post, just I'm laughing because it's I love it. It's so Scottish. It's just the first comment on this post begins, "This burns my arse." Which is a way of saying that this this person has feelings about this post. Anyway, what a lovely phrase. Which was there a particular section of this that you were interested in? Clans, genealogy, history, language, wow. Okay, Scotland. Scotland was for a time incredibly culturally rich and still is, but like at a time when that wasn't necessarily a commonplace, lots of medicine and science came out of Scotland, lots of kind of cultural stuff. A lot of Scots emigrated to the US, became sort of wealthy philanthropists and stuff. Can you still be a philanthropist if you're wealthy? I mean, I guess that's the only way to be a philanthropist, right? But at the same time, why don't you just give all your money away?
Because then you can't be a philanthropist any longer.
The self-limiting philanthropist. A conundrum. Hmm.
By Chris Efferson. Published by Random House.
Aren't they called Random Penguin now?
I'm so out of the publishing world.
I think
Elsevier is still bad, right?
Always. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forever. I can't find any bit. There is no section on this website called Things We as Scots Are Really Proud Of.
But wasn't that the post that you linked to?
No, that was about the chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, but if you scroll a little bit further, I think they go into stuff that Scots has done. Great things by great Scots or something. Perhaps I remember this incorrectly. But
No, it devolves into a discussion about whiskey. Okay.
Is that kind of the Godwin's law of Scots?
Basic. Every conversation will eventually wind up in a discussion about whiskey. This is a very fighty-oriented list of things, so I do see in the first comment, while other countries have won last-stand battle, we fought tooth and nail with a richer neighbour that vastly outnumbered us and won the wars and most of the battles. Look at Sark, Roslin, Bannockburn and Stirling and all the other great victories of the Bruce, Wallace and the Douglases, the fight of the Highlanders and Island men in Ireland, our brethren saving France from England and Sweden from the German... Just one German. our being... The cream of the British army, without whom there would have been no empire, and our strides in the colonies. Yeah, by all means, let's shackle ourselves to the legacy of slavery and colonialism. I think that's where this post goes off the rails. This is the fucking Godwin's law of Scotland. This kind of, yes, there wouldn't have been an empire. We wouldn't have enslaved people. We wouldn't have, oh, Jesus, stop now. Yeah. Yeah, and then it just goes a bit up to 11. We must not forget our greatness, despite society dealing us heavy doses of shame and guilt in ourselves that isn't rightfully ours. Yeah, I'll go through and correct the grammar of that after. We are great people, and if we awaken from our slumber and take care of our bodies, spirits and minds, we will be great again. Jesus, this guy's fucking Donald Trump. That is a guy. Oldie English.
I think that's Donald McTrump.
Donald, where's your trousers? There's a link for you for after. In fact, yes, I must send you that link because I think it's going to resonate in a deeply uncomfortable way. Which is what this podcast is all about, right?
Hmm.
Tell me more about the West Coast thing. Because you grew up there and you've lived your whole life there, more or less.
Yeah, but in my case, I always also had a connection to the East Coast because my mother is from there and I have family there.
Traitor.
So,
I can relate.
I'm a confused
my dad's English.
Child. Yeah.
Same.
It's hard to talk about this without any prompts.
We'll take it back to the kind of my being conservative book mold, if that helps.
Yeah.
Should we explain what happened there? Like, is that a thing? Can one kind of... It reminded me a bit of people saying, you don't mean who, you mean whom, which is only ever used to punch down at people, which is to say, yes, this is grammatically correct, and I know, quote-unquote, better than you. therefore you have to modulate how you speak. It felt like that.
So the gender thing, I don't think about this very much, actually. I'm not even certain if I use two or three.
I think you mostly use two, but I see you wander around. And then
quite I'm often probably you use... inconsistent.
You're definitely that sounds inconsistent.
Like me. Yeah.
Or does it? But like you use often colloquially, you use you write the written form of Norwegian in definitely radical bookmål, which is like there's different endings for verbs and stuff. But we all do that. That's kind of chatty, right?
But when the chips are down.
Nice chip segue.
I probably use two in my prose.
But it's legit, right? To write the other way. But it's also political, right?
But I'm not sure how aware people are of this. Outside sort of people that care very much about text. Which are most of the people in our company, I guess. But I'm not sure how much it signals, like, unconsciously. If you can sort of... I'm not sure.
Performative bookmål.
I think it's a much stronger signal if you write Nynorsk or something.
That's
more of a marker, yeah.
That I get. That's kind of like, no, this is part of my identity and I've made a deliberate choice almost.
And they have associations and groups and stuff like that. Mm. You haven't that with sort of the bokmål variations.
Mm. And this is kind of interesting because this is kind of... I'm struggling for a metaphor or a simile maybe. But... It feels like, well, okay, I've chosen to write in this way that is used by the majority and more conventional, but at the same time, I'm going to push the edges of what is normal in that it is completely allowed, it's absolutely within the grounds of acceptable writing, and yet somehow it's a little bit, I don't know. It's just like if you were in your heart a West Coaster, but you grew up like just writing bokmål, is this what you would do to kind of... Like, assert your identity.
Perhaps some do that. But there are a lot of people that will be annoyed if some, most often Easterners, for example, argue that we should just write bokmål in the schools and Nynorsk should be optionable and so on. They feel that as an attack on their cultural identity.
Right.
And while it doesn't map entirely to the East-West Coast thing, there's a tendency, I think.
Yeah. All my colleagues, all our colleagues who write in Nynorsk, I think are from the West Coast, right?
Except Målfrid, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't know where Målfrid is from, actually. I'll have to ask.
I don't think the West Coast.
I'm
not sure.
I get really confused. I'm undergoing a period of extreme confusion about dialect because I thought a colleague at another agency that we're doing some work with was from Stavanger, and it turns out he's actually from Arendal. And I'm like, whoa, that's a big difference. But they speak in ways that are really similar. It's really, really throwing me. Anyway. It occurred to me that I have tried to patch together my identity as in, like, as seen in the context of Britain in how I use Norwegian by adopting three genders. Because in Oslo, it sometimes means that you are from a working class background. If you use three, it can be seen as a kind of sociolect.
30 years ago...
Sure, yeah. But it's like there's some hangover, there's some cultural hangover there that persists.
I guess, yeah.
But also, like, I recognise that a lot of people from the West Coast and from North Norway were also using three genders, and I was like, well, this just feels like a much more natural fit because culturally that is much more where I'm from than Oslo. I'm not a Londoner, I will never be a Londoner. But it's weird to concoct a national identity in a country I'm not from.
Yeah, It is. Well, I don't mind it, but I imagine it difficult, perhaps, or is it even necessary?
It is weird that it has happened. It was not a thing. It wasn't like I set out to go, right, I will be from X, because I can't do that. You know, that's not real.
But you sort of decided on how you wanted to end up speaking Norwegian.
Hmm.
Because I think I remember you wanting to sort of speak West Coast and air.
It's really complicated, because I'm a natural roller of R's, and that limits my options. Like, that's almost like saying if I were to pick where I'm going to be from in Norway, yeah, then I'm, you know, that cuts out a lot of places right away.
Yeah, and instead of taking the easy road, you go for the hardest. Or hardest. Or
I don't know. I'm trying to speak Norwegian like it makes sense to me to speak it. And sometimes that means I end up sounding like I'm from one place and sometimes from another. But it's a bit weird. And it's always going to be this cobbled together hybrid of national identity mess. And we're talking way too much about me. And I demand a return to the chip on shoulder West Coast theme.
Yeah, but you have to tease it out because, again, the most it is the thing about being sort of forgotten and not recognized, I guess. But I wouldn't be offended if anyone said, "Oh, you're from Østfold." It would be a stupid mistake to do because I don't sound anything like from Østfold, but. I wouldn't bother me.
Hmm. But it's a bit hard. Like, it would be like if Oslo was used to refer to the whole of Norway, or the East Coast was used to refer to the whole of Norway, and that it's not a comparison that really works.
Yeah, it doesn't ever happen. No. I think.
Hmm.
In case it happens, it is when some American says that. We are Sweden or something.
Mm,
or mistake. Yeah, confused that. Then everyone has a chip on their shoulder. But
yeah, but didn't their people used to own your people?
Well, we broke free.
For those listening, Knut is bristling slightly. That was you did a very good little chip on shoulder dance there.
Yeah, I think perhaps I did.
You did. You did this thing with your shoulders, and I'm like, I recognize that.
So, the east side is perhaps a bit more east.
Say more.
It's Sweden.
Oh, see that east side. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Oh, that thing. Mm. What things happened when you were a kid to make you aware that you were not you personally, but like where you were was not the center of national attention?
I don't think I was aware of that.
When did it happen then? You became aware of this?
That's a hard question. Perhaps pretty late when people started to move. When my friends started to move to Oslo because there was where things happened.
Right. How old were you?
Well, this would be in my student years, I guess.
Hmm. It's just like people graduate and then they get a job in Oslo because that's where the jobs are.
Yeah, something like that.
Or where it's all happening.
Yeah.
One of the things I really liked about Stormcast Conference earlier this year, it was very deliberately trying to be a thing of the West Coast for people in the West Coast to try and help industry regenerate and become slightly less dependent on fossil fuels. And I thought it was a really nice initiative. Disclaimer, our company, your company, runs it. It felt like that's like a whole set of problems that the East Coast doesn't have in a way. Like the whole of Norway is hugely dependent on oil money and trying to slowly, I think, wean itself off. But in terms of just ordinary people who want to earn money, there's a big oil industry off the West Coast.
Yeah. Along this theme, there is a tension and a suggestion that the West Coast is where the money comes in, where the value is made and everything, and the East Coast is where it is spent.
Right. So you all over there do the hard backbreaking labor. Well, maybe not you, like, obviously building websites is very backbreaking, but and then like the people in Parliament in Oslo just kind of let's just give ourselves a pay rise.
Yeah, or have you seen the roads in the eastern part of the country? They're so much better than the roads on the West Coast.
This is true.
Well, it is sort of true, but it also is perhaps because, as you know, the West Coast have a great deal of mountains and curves and so on, like
geography,
and the plain meadows on the east part of the country. There you can just have a road straight ahead.
Right, we are easier to tarmac. There's not a lot of tunnels here by comparison.
Exactly. But having said that, the road seems much more broader and faster and leaner and everything.
Where?
On the east part of Norway.
Yeah, we probably got more people and therefore more cars and therefore wider roads, I guess.
But all the goods, all the transport and logistics that happens on the West Coast. So, for example, yesterday it was icy. A car that crashed on the road pretty much stopped the whole traffic on the West Coast of Norway.
Mm.
Pretty much.
Because there's like one major road.
Yeah.
I heard they're making a tunnel past your old house, kind of.
They're always making tunnels.
Yeah, but like this one's going to be really big. It's going to go from Stavanger north up to wherever. There's going to be a little turn off to some small islands. Yeah. And then it's, I can't remember where it ends up, but it's pretty ambitious. It's like 20 kilometers of tunnel.
Actually, the ambition is to have tunnels and bridges along all the West Coast, so you don't have to have ferries.
This makes me a little sad because I love riding ferries in Norway.
But this also perhaps challenges the conception of the West Coast not being prioritized in terms of roads and stuff.
Because you all get fancy tunnels and new roads. There's a lot of building work, right?
Yeah.
Mm. But is that just so that Oslo gets to keep raking in the cash? The oil industry must function well if we are to have new hats.
Yeah, perhaps. Right. This is wearing me down.
I'm sorry, do you feel oppressed now?
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of it before we started recording. Now I am.
Wow.
This has been a blue pill or a red pill, I don't remember. But, which is it? Is it blue or red?
He takes the red pill, right? Yeah, because Cypher then says to him, why didn't I take the blue pill?
Or does he?
Thank you.
Was it all a dream all along?
Hmm. This is interesting. I think you should sit with this for the next 2 weeks and ponder.
For the next 2 weeks? For the rest of my life?
Well, sure, but you know what I mean. Like, if you were actually more irritated about this than you thought, then that seems like a good thing to chew on. Because that's kind of where I was going with this. I did not come here with the agenda number one, provoke knit, but it's a nice to have.
So I will ponder whilst chewing on the chip.
Something indigestion.
How far can I take this metaphor? I don't know. Pretty far.
That's never stopped you before. I just say roll on.
So, Do we have some chips of the week?
We do. I was going to do a little follow-up. Is that cool?
Oh, we have follow-up?
Well, kind of.
Okay. Go ahead.
Fine, next color, item. Whatever.
Yeah.
Unexpected Denmark follow-up. I got to be at a meeting where there was a Danish leverander supplier. And they sent someone to this meeting in Norway because we all need to work together and it was easiest to get everyone in a room together. And I got to be on the other end of the Danish thing, which is to say in a room full of people speaking Norwegian with a Danish person speaking Danish. And that was kind of delightful. It was, again, it was kind of mostly understandable. I don't know whether he was making an effort for everyone's benefit. At no point did things devolve into English. This was really, really interesting. So he just carried on in Danish and we carried on in Norwegian. And I was pleased that hung in there for the most part. I was also interested that my Norwegian colleagues occasionally had to ask him to repeat himself. I thought it was really interesting to kind of have the shoe on the other foot slightly. It worked better than I would have thought. I really did think maybe we were just all going to talk English for 2 hours.
That's great. Yeah, it is interesting. And did you feel a bit like David Attenborough?
I was very aware of kind of making anthropological notes. I was just kind of, this is so interesting, but I also have to listen to what this gentleman is saying. Oh, it's so interesting what's happening right here. So yeah, this is my life at the moment. Is like it's always proceeding on the kind of the explicit and the meta level, which is kind of interesting in itself. Oh shit, I just meted the meta. Moving on. I have not read all the way through Jon Fosse's Nokon Chemtet Komma, which is a, I don't know what genre of play it fits into. I want to say postmodern, but is it?
That's a good question. I think it's modernist, actually.
Okay, cool. I think you sent me a link ages ago, and I can't find my way back to it, where there was like a terrible PDF version of it all the way, like the whole thing online.
It's probably on the National Library website.
Yeah. Top tip, thank you. And it's great, and it makes all kinds of colour pictures in my head. And I only got through maybe like the first third or something like that. But it was this sort of very Waiting for Godot experience where like there's just a conversation happening between two people about something that is obviously on the horizon but hasn't really materialised yet. And they're kind of feeling their way into this thing. But it reminded me, so the title translates to what, someone's going to come, right? Someone is coming. Which makes it a very kind of Waiting for Godot sort of setup. But this happened for real because we had one of those experiences which reminded me of being in the UK where someone says, we are going to come and install a service or come and do a thing, and you wait in all day and they don't come. And it was very Beckettian or Beckett-like or whatever. But it reminded me, it was the Norwegian equivalent of Waiting for Godot. Hopefully they will come eventually.
Spoiler warning, someone does indeed come and make some tension.
Yeah, no, I read a little.
Yeah.
I read a little summary of it, so I kind of know where it's going to go. So it is, I guess the difference is, the Norwegian difference is that in Waiting for Godot, someone does actually turn up and install fibre internet at your house. Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was kind of interesting because like it's a really, really common experience in the UK that you wait in all day and they don't come and you don't get a message about why they haven't come and they're like relentlessly unapologetic about it. And the experience here so far has been, I'm terribly sorry, I have no idea what has happened. There's nothing in our records to indicate that this shouldn't have happened today. Let me get back to you.
You got lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times has this happened to you? Is this like a quintessential Norwegian experience as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yay. I've got native.
Right. I think we have to push some of these items to the next one. But
these are just endlessly rolling follow-up items. Go on then. Hit me with your word or cultural pick of the week.
My cultural pick of the week is the Guardian long read I sent you on the sandwich.
That is a good read. It's what did you like about it?
It's a holiday read. That was a deep cut.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was it a diagonal cut or a straight line, two rectangles cut?
It was a diagonal, of course. Nice. I don't know. It's fascinating that it's pretty long, comprehensive read about how the sandwich came to be, the challenges of the sandwich, and the economics and the cultural everything about the sandwich. And I told you that to me the diagonally cut sandwich is a marker of Britain in my head, and it is because Mr. Bean once sat on a bench and made himself a sandwich. I think
so. A sandwich to you is quintessentially British.
Or is it English or?
Discuss. If I was being slightly cheeky about Scotland, I would say that the Greggs cheese and onion pasty is the kind of the sandwich of Scotland. But people eat sandwiches in Scotland too. So, what was it that surprised you, or what was it that you took away from this long sandwich, foot long?
Well, not very much. So, it will not change my life in any means, but it was interesting.
Come on!
And I'm glad that this article exists.
Did it open your eyes to possibilities about sandwiches that you had not previously considered?
For the sake of this episode, I can just say yes. Transformed. I'm sandwich enlightened.
It's your cultural pick. I want to understand why it's your cultural pick. Because it reinforces a happy stereotype, or
no, it's just quite interesting. Nerdy. Yeah,
It was well written. I think my favourite bit of it was the postmodern sandwich suggested by Mrs. Beaton in her cookbook, where she basically like salted and peppered a piece of toast and put it between two slices of bread. And I spent a non-trivial amount of the weekend thinking, actually, that sounds pretty good. Maybe I should make one.
Yeah, you should have a postmodern sandwich with a Scottish cringe. Goes great together.
Right? But the thing is, what should actually happen is I should be about to tuck into the sandwich and then some fucker should come and take it away from me.
Yeah.
That is how you eat a sandwich with a Scottish cringe. You don't. She says whose country is still in receipt of some financial subsidies from south of the border, but hey.
Well, that will not last.
Yeah, oh man, it was like several episodes we went there without mentioning Brexit explicitly or implicitly, but you've just reminded me how screwed the whole thing is. Thanks for that. Cultural pick of the week. I had a very cool opportunity. I went to the architect's Snøhetta because one of our colleagues is married to someone who works there, and Snøhetta is the architect's office who designed the opera house, the opera and ballet in Oslo. And it's a beautiful and striking building. It's kind of shaped like an iceberg sliding into the fjord. It's really, I don't know, it's one of those pieces of architecture that it's kind of impossible not to have feelings about. It's at once kind of elegant and striking and interesting, and it makes you think about what architecture is and is for. The thing that it does best is that you can walk all over it. It's designed to be walked and all over and touched. And it makes opera and ballet accessible in that way. And the costume department have big open windows so you can look in. It's trying to demystify things that have previously been high culture. And it's just this wonderful building. But we got to go to the architect's offices where they do this.
All right.
And where they draw this stuff. And where they have all these models. Right? And so I got to see a tiny little opera house, which was very fun, which was like one of the kind of working models that they had. But I also got to go and touch, because like you have to put your fingers on stuff. All the materials that they clad buildings with, because they have samples come in all the time of stone and wood and cladding and fabric that get used to, you know, make and construct buildings. And they've got all these scale models, beautiful scale models. There's a cinema complex and kind of place to be somewhere in the Middle East where the outside is clad in pipes. And the pipes make this swirl and cover the entire building, and it's completely mesmerizing. And they had this model, which was basically just like a pebble covered in wire. And so there's all this kind of physical prototyping stuff. And it was just, it was lovely. Like, we were just so inspired by being there. Because these are people who have to think about the physics and, not the physics, but the kind of physical qualities of what buildings are like and for and how they should be experienced. And like, when I go to buildings, I very often touch the things. Like, all the walls, and like, if the walls are made out of stone, I want to know what it feels like. And it was just really fun. And we also got to see a laser cutter in action.
Ooh, that's cool.
You can't really, it is cool. It was amazingly cool. You can't really look at a laser cutter in action because you're not supposed to look at the kind of the laser cutting bit. But you sort of have to. My husband like did a clever thing, which was he filmed it on his phone and then could look at the phone while he was filming. So kind of you don't blind yourself in that way. It was very cool. And we got to see a guy doing things with chairs, and there were people kind of, you know, working late and having intelligent conversations about, I don't know, stuff, buildings. But it was very, very inspiring. And there's physical stuff everywhere, prototypes and scale models, and it was awesome. I can't really recommend this as like a cultural pick that people can just go and do, because I don't know if they really do tours, but they should.
If you get the chance, do not decline.
Totally. Just find someone who works there and just glom onto them and never let go. But now I want to make things. But I don't have, like, a workshop, and neither do I have anywhere to put all the stuff.
You can come to Bergen and borrow our 3D printer. Actually, we also have a makerspace now with a laser cutter, come think of it. Bergen is where it happens.
I'm sure we have stuff like that too, but...
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. No, we're not that cool. Okay. Bergen is totally the place that would have, like, a makerspace. I can well believe that. But it's so cool. I want to make things. I need a workshop. We're going to have to move.
Or you own property now, so you can just make space for it.
I can just, like... go, sorry neighbors, it's been special, but can you just like clear out, and I'm just gonna turn your apartment into a
I have a great pick of the week that piggybacks on your pick of the week. The
pig of the week,
The Norwegian TV show The Inventor.
Yeah,
this is great. This is awesome. I hope that people outside of Norway has access to this. But yeah, you will love this.
Cool. Is it worth disclosing to our listeners how much time you spend watching things like people DIY videos on YouTube, for a better phrase?
Don't get me started on primitive technology. Second pick of the week. It's DIY all the way down.
Yeah.
Right. You also had a word.
I can't find the window. There's too many windows open. I'm easily confused. Has recently been measured. Yeah. Fake leg.
as a fake leg?
Well, this is exactly the conversation that took place. When we had friends over and who are Norwegian, and one of them was talking about having fake leg, and my husband's like, what? Fake leg? And it unraveled that this is not fake leg, but this is fake legitimation.
Okay.
Fake identity. So like having fake ID. But
these friends of yours, they are 16 or something?
No, but one of them is a doctor, and I think she hears a lot of things. or she sees a lot of things in her job. I can't remember how this came up. Maybe underage drinking, actually.
Oh, you mean physician?
As opposed to the other kind of doctor. Yeah, she's a real doctor. She has, like, real credentials. She can actually do something useful. And, yeah, I thought it was funny that there's a concept called fake leg, and that there isn't really a Norwegian word for fake. It just uses, everyone just uses the English word. But when you read it in Norwegian, it looks like faka, which isn't a thing, right?
I wouldn't be too sure. Perhaps it is a thing.
Well, is there en faka, et faka, I faka?
It should be a word.
It should.
No, it isn't. It's up for grabs.
Hmm.
That's weird. It should be a word. Well, it sounds so wordy.
It should be I faka.
En faka.
Hva I faka?
Kan du gå og hente faken?
Ja.
Her ser vi at vi trenger en faka. It sounds like a some tool or
right,
equipment
right.
or something.
Er det den store eller den lilla faka de vil ha?
For this, I think we need a big one.
Excellent. Right, homework for next week is figuring out what one of these actually does.
So, to sum up this episode, it has been an inventive episode. We have the Scottish cringe.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't perhaps invent it, but we have the postmodern sandwich.
I think in order to truly live our values, we have to claim to have invented the postmodern sandwich and be really gutted that someone else now claims that it was actually them.
Yeah.
Per Norwegians with the paperclip.
And we also have the new tool, faka.
Hmm. I faka.
And I will go ponder on my mixed feelings about being inferior and superior at the same time.
Good luck with that.
Ha det bra, takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.